We are going live in a few minutes. I'm just testing the normal craziness. Whoa, what a crazy year so far. We've been on hiatus for a while, but today we have a talk we're going to be doing on love and on compassion and on how meditation actually changes the brain and reverses aging. Meditating on love every day actually creates more gray matter, makes you younger, makes you happier, and defeats depression. And there are experiments done with scientific experiments done at MIT and Harvard on the brains of Buddhist monks. Compassion meditation. They spend a long time meditating on love for the world. And I came up with a theory that the molecular structure around you changes as your brainwaves change. You radiate love. You know, it's a joke I wrote once. You can be attractive even if you're not good looking, because if you radiate love, you attract people. So there's so much we don't know about the brain, but I'm learning more and more about it. I'm going to start doing some quantum physics experiments and research with Dr. Spirlaza, who's also done experiments on cholesterol going down in your body the more you meditate on love. So this is something we should all be doing for the world. And it can change things in the physical universe. I don't know if this is actually broadcasting live, and often I can't see the chat. Oh, there are people there. Okay. So this is the first time since I finished a movie in April that was wonderful. It was a wonderful experience, produced by Noreen McClendon, directed by my good friend Melina Gay. Now, Noreen and I have become good friends, and she's going to be on the God Shots podcast coming up. She works with prisoners, goes out to visit Folsom Prison, and has written a book called Hurt Highway, How to Transform People in Prison that haven't been able to get out in the world and do anything. You know, she has an incredible spiritual ministry, and she's a woman who changes lives. Darlene, while we're young, here's Ted Knight, while we're young. Here's Rodney Dangerfield, while we're young, in Caddyshack. When Ted Knight finished Caddyshack, he came to the set. You know, he just finished filming Caddyshack when our show started. We'd already done the pilot, and then we got picked up by ABC Network. We all came back to work in August after the actor's strike in 1980. And Ted is imitating Rodney Dangerfield up the wazoo. Every other word out of his mouth was a Rodney joke. So it was like, that's how I got to know Ted. My first experience of Ted, we could not stop laughing. It was like laughter is still my favorite drug, bar none. I don't know if I can see the chat. You know why? Because you guys are on Facebook and I'm over here on this thing. Oh, by the way, we just got over COVID. First time in 3 years. I've never had COVID. My voice is still a little scratchy. It's not quite 100% gone, although, of course, we're testing negative now. But it just goes to show you, you know, I mean, the vaccine does prevent hospitalizations and being on ventilators and all that other scary stuff. So I'm grateful for modern medicine, but I also know the spiritual power is even stronger because your thoughts create everything. Your emotions have a lot, you know, if they say stress causes 98 or 92% of all disease is stress related. Stress is worry, fear, anxiety. You know, fear is false evidence appearing real. So if you meditate and you just quiet the brain and you focus on something beautiful, or you take a walk in nature every single day, your brain cells, the neurons, the synapses start to reconnect. The brain starts to heal. The body starts to heal. Good information. Okay, let's see what's going on here. Oh, I see people. Hello, Joe. Yes, I hear you, Joe. I do want to hear all of your comments. The Israeli crisis is a big one, and there's so much fighting going on and so much misinformation. Oh, there's Darlene. Okay, here we go.
Here we go.
I've been rambling on like a numbskull and I figured out how to make it go live on Facebook. So we're live, but I've been just rambling on like an idiot. So You look gorgeous. Oh my God, so good to see you.
Nice to see you too. And nice to see everybody out there that we haven't seen you for a while. So this is very exciting.
This is Dr. Darlene Spirlaza.
Yeah, hi. And I'm actually in Utah in a hotel room. I apologize for my background. Maybe I can make that different.
Oh, I like it. It's pretty.
It is a bedroom.
I got some crazy backgrounds I want to show everybody. Tell us where have you been? What have you been doing?
Oops.
Background's fine.
Yeah, I don't know what I did here. I lost you somehow. Oh, there we are.
Lost okay. Me?
Oh. Yeah, I'm back now. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So where have I been? Well, it's been a busy year for both you and I, Lydia. I mean, between our family obligations and travel obligations, it's like neither one of us has been able to connect. So we've kind of got a little bit off the grid with our podcasts. But hey, you do have some pretty interesting backgrounds.
I always pick Architectural Digest homes, glass and seaside villas, and I try to upload.
I wish I knew how to do that because, wait a minute, maybe I do.
Just find a favorite picture on Google, a favorite photograph from a beautiful home or a beautiful seascape, and then you just upload it to the Zoom app.
Well, I guess it's better now. It's blurred.
Wait a minute. We've been on hiatus. We took an official hiatus when I did that movie with that amazing cast, and I just was talking about it.
Director
Evelina Gay, Jane Kennedy, Lawrence Hilton Jacobs, oh my God, Vincent Irizarry, all these famous actors. It was really fun.
So when will that be coming out?
I don't know. They're fixing the music right now. They're editing, and I'll let you know.
That's awesome.
They win some awards on the circuit, and we'll see what happens.
Well, that's very, very, very good. Awesome.
The hiatus we took, we are back now. We're going to start doing the podcast regularly. Mm-hmm. Now we have a lot to cover. Tell me what you've been doing and all the new things in your life, if you can.
Okay, so let me start. I'm still at the university. For everybody that has, you know, been coming around since I've joined Lydia in this endeavor. So I am the assistant dean of nursing at South University, which is located out of Savannah, Georgia. I've been traveling a lot this year. I've had to go to Savannah for graduation. I was in Minnesota to see my kids and grandkids. I am now in Utah. And so if I just feel like I'm a revolving door, packing a bag. And I told Lydia, I said, well, I'm going to be in Utah, but we can do it from here. And Utah is surprisingly warm right now. It's about, I don't know, 75 degrees outside. They're saying Wow. It's about 10 to 20 degrees warmer than what it normally is here. So, but yeah, so I've been doing that and had a lot going on with God Shots, a lot of things there. I've been working on a spiritual journey, which this is called God Shots. And so I'm identifying spiritual aspects of my life, going a little bit deeper. And I hope that we get to talk about that on the show today.
Actually, I'd love to talk to you right now about what, are sure. You able to talk about the amazing constellation process you went through or no?
I can. For anybody that's out there, I mean, this is probably going to sound crazy, but I've done a lot of therapy. And being a nurse practitioner myself, I understand therapy. I understand the value of it. Sometimes we get stuck in life and we need to have additional guidance, preferably from somebody that is not related, doesn't understand the story, and can take an accurate look at it, right?
Objective.
So I've done multiple different types. I've done cognitive, non-cognitive. I have done talk therapy. And in the past 2.5 years, I was connected in, and I don't believe there's any accidents. I was connected into a woman in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that does what is called constellation therapy, which was entirely new to me. Constellation therapy was kind of uncovered and discovered by a priest by the name of Bert Hellinger. And my understanding from what I've read about him is he was hearing confessions and people talking about their sins. It was always going back into the genealogy of the family. It was always family oriented, family driven. And so he started really researching that and came up with what's called constellation therapy. And so basically it takes you back through your family genealogy and heals from the inside out. And I can tell you my personal experience is that this therapy is working better for me than anything ever has in my life.
Wow.
So much is being uncovered and it's helping me heal. I feel stronger, better now than I ever have in my life. And I still have, I still feel like I have a way to go. Because I had hidden wounds. I think that we all have hidden wounds. And, you know, my life was dichotomous, if you will. I mean, I worked very hard to become successful in the medical world. And I achieved that goal. I mean, I was driven. And, you know, I have a doctorate from the University of Alabama, but my insides and my outsides weren't matching.
Right.
And if you have that happen, that can be a very difficult place. You're shaking your head.
We all have, yeah, a lot of us have that when your insides aren't matching your outsides or your goals and your internal beliefs about yourself don't match the picture you have of yourself.
Yes. Or the picture of what the world has of you.
Ooh.
Which is really, I mean,
it's an illusion.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Like the world see me as this practitioner that was taking care of people. How could I have anything wrong with me? I was strong. And so people saw me like that. But then when people got to know me and I had fears and I had inhibitions and I had all of these things that I didn't even know why I had them, but I had them. And so it was really hard to be in relationships with anyone because they would meet you and think one thing. And then when they got to know you, you were somebody entirely different.
Oh,
and this therapy is really helping me learn about that.
We have good friends who actually do constellation therapy, Bruce and Leah. And I, now that you've gone into it and I'm going to start doing it too, I think I want to try it. It's supposed to be amazing. I'd like to have them on the show to talk about it also with you.
Yeah. Yeah. And the guest that we're having this afternoon, she understands constellation therapy as well as dreams. And it's just super exciting. When your life starts unfolding and it starts making sense to you. Here's an example of my constellation that I don't mind sharing with people because sometimes it's so deep. We don't even know where it comes from. And it took me a long time to get this one. But, you know, I was never one of those people that ask, why did you name me what you named me to my mom and dad? I just didn't really think about it. My name was Darlene and I just went on and that was that.
Yeah.
When my dad died on March 16th, I got a really big shock.
Sorry.
That's okay. And I got a really big shock at that point in time. So my father passed away at 5 o'clock in the morning and we did what we needed to do to take care of the funeral arrangements and that type of thing. And then we were at my two brothers and I were back at my mom and dad's house and we were looking at old pictures and stuff like that. And I pulled up a picture of an aunt that I dearly loved. And I said, oh, and it was my dad's sister. And anyway, I made some very nice comments about my aunt and my mom said something about, well, you know, she always wants to get into people's business. And I'm like, what do you mean? And she goes, well, for example, like when I named you and I'm like, what about when you named me? Like, this is the first time I'm sitting here at this age and my mom's talking about naming me. Right. And my dad had just passed. And she goes, well, your name was his girlfriend's name.
You told me that this is really weird.
It is so weird. And I dropped what I was eating because by this point in my life and being in recovery and through therapy, I understand that that's huge with energy.
They named you after your dad's girlfriend prior to meeting your mom?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes. And so what basically happened, according to my therapist, and here we go with the constellation therapy, was that even as a child, the energies were so skewed because of this. Like my mom would have her back to me. Like when I did the constellation, my mom was standing with her back to me on one side. My father was standing with his back to me on the other side. And I just cried and cried. And for any of you that have been in constellation, yeah, you're going to ask me a question.
Wait, let me just pause for a second. When you say your mom was standing to their back to you and your dad, they weren't really there.
Oh no, they were my representative.
And your mom is not into this stuff. I don't think she's aware
of it. No.
These are representations of your parents.
Yes. When you do a constellation, you pick representatives to represent your mother, your father, yourself. I wasn't doing it myself, but what incredibly happened, was the girl I picked to be me, she was the first one to come out and find her space within the circle. And this is a very prayerful, I mean, there were lots of prayers said before this happened, lots of prayers during when this was happening, because the goal is to almost have your higher power, God, whatever you want to call the source, disclose and show you, actually show you what's internal and what you need to know, right? And so when I picked the girl to be my representative, she came to the center of the room and she just started sobbing and holding her belly and saying her stomach hurt and saying her hands were going numb.
Oh my God.
And she got on the floor. And the counselor actually said, do we need to stop? Because she was so, it was making her ill to be me.
Oh, weird.
And she said no. And then the counselor pulled somebody out of the audience and she asked the girl, she goes, what do you need? And the girl said, I need to be held. So she pulled somebody out of the audience to hold her. And while she was being held, the crying subsided, the stomach ache subsided, the numbness in the hands subsided. And as I'm watching this constellation of myself unfold, it was spot on of how I was as a child. And so when she asked, who's holding you? The girl just said, anybody. And that's the way it was for me.
Wait a minute. So this is very interesting. You needed to be held and loved. Love was the healer. I have come up with some evidence that love actually heals the physical body.
Yes.
And I just remembered a friend of mine, she had two foster kids who were suffering from a really broken home life. And their parents were drug addicts. And their synapses in their brain weren't connecting. They didn't know love. And she began to love them. And they started to reconnect. I mean, it's like, I think love is the healer. Love is the healer we all need. The one thing we all need.
Love is absolutely the healer. And what I had going on at that point in time as a child that I recognized with the constellation was the fact that my mom's back was towards me. And that was because she, once I was named and once that energy was in the space, plus any, you know, because we all bring our baggage into relationships, whether we're parents, whether we're not, whether we're siblings, we all bring our stuff. So my mom had untreated things that she brought with her. And she had a hard time looking at me because it reminded her of my dad's love, right? And the only reason that relationship broke up was because it was based in California. He wanted to come back to West Virginia and the woman didn't want to come. And so then he was standing with his back towards me. And as that girl was crying, the representative for my father went, ask, can you look at your daughter? And he said, I don't want to look at her. That's too much drama.
Oh my God.
So I had two parents that were like, didn't really want to look at me. And it all stemmed from my name.
Parents didn't give you unconditional love that you needed as a child.
They couldn't. It wasn't that they didn't. And that's one of the blessings I'm learning.
Yeah.
Wasn't that they didn't want to. They couldn't. They were not equipped to love.
Odd that they would choose that name, that your mom would allow that name to be chosen.
My mom chose it.
Wow. That's passive aggressive, to say the least.
Yeah. So my mom chose that name. But the thing was, I didn't know that all of my life. And you know, Lydia, for all of my life, I had people literally ask me, are you sure that these are your parents? Are you sure you belong in this family?
Oh,
because I acted very, very differently all the way around. Like, I was the first person in my family to go to college. I was the first person in like generations to go to college. I like pretty things. I like to dress up. I like to, you know, be educated. I like to do things. And my family was more of the, just simple, country, not extravagant, didn't ever care if they saw New York City. I was driven, like I wanted to see New York City, right? So it was very different for me. But what I learned is the energy after who I was named, that could potentially be her energy, not my parents. So energy plays a lot into our lives. It really does.
There's one supreme source of love that I believe that when I found my so-called higher power, and you know, some people don't believe in God, whatever you, it's bizarre to have to explain this out loud, because each of us has an inner wisdom or an inner intuition that kind of guides us. And if we learn to trust that, trust in the goodness of the universe, it's really a choice to stop being blown about by the constant hurricane-like force of bad news and the whiplash I'm getting from having these bad things happen in the world. If I live that way, you crumble and you wither up and you die young. I mean, you cannot live your life based on the opinion of others, the constant bombardment of bad news and bad things going on. Social media is really treacherous at times for younger people.
It is.
Until they have a solid core. But to build that solid core, you have to be quiet and turn off the phones and the news and the media for a while and find that inner peace. It's inside all of us. Mm-hmm. It's inside every single one of us.
It really is.
It's a force of love.
Yes. And
Tarzan was born in the jungle and raised by apes, and he found a way to, you know.
Yes. And that's true. I mean, but you're right. It's the unconditional love and unconditionally knowing that we're human, we're going to make mistakes, and it's okay. And we're loved no matter what, you know? But when you don't get that from very young on, it kind of sets you up for any types of problems in the future. You know, like, I'm starting to understand as a practitioner that a lot of things we deal with, for example, stomach issues, patients that come in with stomach issues, lots of times you can find no reasons, you can find no rationale physically. But if you step into the emotional, spiritual part of that person and what they're harboring and they're holding on to and they're not sharing, it's making them ill. That's why they say stress kills. It does.
Yes.
It does.
I agree. Mm-hmm. There's something, I followed a story years ago out of Arizona, and it just blew my mind. It was a CBS story about a cab driver who picked up a very bitchy, grumpy older woman, and he got lost. He was taking her to some doctor's office in Phoenix, Arizona, and he got lost along the way, and she was so angry at him, she started hitting him with her pocketbook, with her purse in the back seat, and going, "You idiot, you're getting lost, I'm late. And he did not react except with love. It was really strange. He just went, "I wonder why she's so grumpy." And he just said, "It's okay, darling, we'll get there." And he found the place. And then she got out of the car and ran in, and he looked at the place wondering what it was. And he went in and found out it was kidney dialysis. So oddly enough, the next week he got her again as a passenger, and she went, "Oh no, you again." And she had this bitchy relationship with him. And he just kind of didn't react, very sweet, drove her to there. And then he got out and he followed her in later. And he asked them, "Why is she in this place? Why is she so angry?" And they said, "Well, she needs a new kidney." And he goes, "Maybe I'm the match." He offered himself.
Oh my.
He got a test done. And they found out he's the only one who matched her out of everybody in her family, out of everyone she knew. And he was willing to give her his kidney.
Wow.
My theory, and then here's what happened. The news reports got a hold of the story, and they did a front page story on it in the local town, I think it was near Phoenix somewhere. And he, through that news report, he found his long lost daughter he hadn't seen in 20 years, that his wife stole and took off in the marriage and disappeared with. His Wow. daughter knew the name. And I believe the synchronicity, to me, that's the major God shot, because I believe that his loving attitude toward the woman, it made him the match. It did. It transformed. Love transformed and made a healing process.
Absolutely.
I don't think he was the match automatically. I think it was his loving action that created the match. That's a different radical way to look at it. I think love heals so radically that it's a choice you make. And every time you choose love over fear, you create a healing, either in other lives or with your own body.
And I agree with that. But, you know, as we talk about that, one of the questions that I would pose to our listeners, to anybody that wants to answer this, why is that so hard? That should be really, really easy. But to me, it has to be a conscious decision every day to live in a loving fashion. And when people are not being loving, to love them anyway. Mother Teresa was really good about that.
Oh my God.
The stories I read about her, it's like, how could she, you know, she even got spit on by a man she was trying to help. And she just kind of wiped her face and said, thank you, and kept working. And it's like, you know, like, I don't think many of us could do that. And it's like, you get to the point where it becomes kind of like a little bit natural just to be loving and kind rather than, like, I woke up today, and this is the honest truth that I want to share with everybody. I woke up just crabby. Just crabby.
It happened.
I hadn't slept well. I had a big day on my docket that I was looking at, and I'm going, okay, you know, and I just took a deep breath, and it was like, and I'm in Utah, I'm not at home with any of my familiarities when I'm doing a podcast. And so it was just kind of like one of those mornings that just, it started that way, and I've let it continue rather than just stopping and making my day different, you know? So
sometimes I write comedy about my bad moods, and spinning it to humor has always been a saving grace for me, but it's ego. It's our lower nature is ego, edging good out, edging God out, EGO. It's like we're grumbling down here in the lower realm. My lower nature is not my best friend. It's where I'm envious, I'm greedy, I'm lazy, I become an idiot, you know, and I become extremely animalistic. You know, I want what I want, and I want it now. There's no delayed gratification. But the minute I sync up with the higher thoughts of compassion and love, it takes quieting the brain. And I was talking before you got on here about Buddhist monks who have been trained in compassion meditation. Their brain waves are in the theta and alpha range, and their brain has become reformed, younger, better, more gray matter. And it's prayerful meditation on love, meditating on love. It actually heals. So it's a matter of making a choice. Mm-hmm. And Einstein said, no problem can be solved at the same level it was created on. If you cannot solve war with more bombs, you cannot bring peace with more war. You have to go to a higher, a diplomatic or a spiritual solution. Now, in the case of what's going on in Israel, you know, there's a certain terrorist group that needs to be eliminated, and Israelis need to defend themselves. But we can't go carpet bomb civilians. So it's really touchy. And that's where Peacemaker was born.
But here's my question to all of that. And, you know, you've known me for a while. I'm not a big news watcher, because I just think that it brings fear into your home, you know, and you don't know how much of it is true and real, or how much of it is made up and fabricated or expanded upon where it should be. And I just look at that whole thing, and it's just like, I just want to go and love everyone there, because it's just such a, I don't want to, I mean, I understand that there's land involved, and there's been land involved for years and years, you know, and it's kind of like getting into a property dispute with your next door neighbor, and it's just never going to go away. Right.
Except one thing.
What's that? Okay.
Finish your thought, and then I'll tell you that.
Yeah, but it's just kind of like, when you really look at that, does it really matter in the scheme of helping others and helping each other? And, you know, when it comes to little innocent children and people at a concert and things like that, I mean, ground really matters that much? I mean,
it shouldn't matter, but Hamas actually, in their charter, I read their charter the other day, their sole purpose of existing is to eradicate and eliminate all Israelis and Jews off the face of the earth. So that's their charter. And they've taken over the Palestinian people as hostages. And they've actually taken all the money they've gotten from Iran to build weapons and tunnels instead of feeding the people and building bomb shelters for their own people and making sure their people are, you know, they took over as the ruling authoritarian government. So it's not like the innocents have a choice either. So it's the innocents we need to protect and love. And you're right. Everyone deserves, every innocent civilian on this earth who doesn't have intentional malice.
Yeah, and I think it's hard enough sometimes, just like by what you get named, life can be hard. You know, like, do we really need to add additional layers of difficulty to what I believe that God created in his likeness and image, which is love, peace,
exactly,
happiness, joy.
Well, there's a reason the great peacemaker was born right there. It's just that I had this funny line, a joke line I used to write, going, you're supposed to be married to the person who annoys you the most. because the most spiritual growth happens with your enemy. And some Israelis just don't get that yet. And that was, I got condemned for saying, including them in the equation. But it's like, if there's anything you should learn in life, is that you can't really win by fighting.
Yes.
You win by blessing and detaching with love, the Al-Anon way. Yes. Love your enemies, bless those who persecute you. It's impossible in this world right now to actually put that into action, I guess, in that arena. But it is something to aspire to.
Yes, it sure is. It is.
Even in our own lives, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, so that's kind of like, you know, but we're just having many, many changes on lots of levels. And I think it's bringing people a lot of fear, a lot of uncertainty, a lot of discomfort, if you will. I know that my mother, who really has no reason just to stay homebound. I mean, she's 85. She turned 85 this year, but she's healthy. She can drive. She sees well. She eats well. I mean, she's good. She doesn't want to go anywhere because she's afraid. She's just afraid. She goes, mm-hmm. I don't know where the next crazy accident's going
to
happen.
Oh my gosh, she can't live in fear. But that happened to me last Sunday. I told everyone before you got on the show that I was frozen in fear. And one of my best, oldest friends was flying into town. I haven't seen her in years. Haven't met her new daughter, her beautiful new daughter, Bella. And it's their one chance to meet them all at the farmer's market, the Jewish section of LA, which is a beautiful place at the Grove. And I was frozen in fear that morning after the bombings of the Hamas attack, where they tortured and killed all those babies and children and young concert goers at that concert. It was unfathomable to me that this could happen in this day and age. And I suddenly went, oh God, what if something happens? You know, I prayed through it. I got through it. I kept shining love on it. I realized I'm protected. I don't know. I just went and we had a great day.
Yeah.
It was an incredible day with some friends I haven't seen in a long time and all their children. So
that's it. You have to, I think we're just at the point where we have to walk through the fear. And unfortunately, at least for me, I don't remember our country being fearful before. We were strong. We were a strong nation and we were protected.
Well, 9/11 kind of.
Yeah.
And it kind of retaliating after that wasn't the right thing to do either, go in and attack an entire country. Yeah. But
So we've had a lot of changes over the course of the last, 20 years, a lot of changes. And, you know, but I do believe that a show like this, and that's my ultimate heart. I mean, that's what I really think. I think that, you know, there's a lot of people out there, and this is what I say to people when I meet them. I have met lovely people here in Utah. I mean, just lovely women, lovely stories. And it's like, if so many people think like we think, and so many people are opposed to things that are going on, why are we the silent majority? Why is that? Because
we're afraid of speaking out.
And that's kind of like whenever you think about, I mean, at least when I think about, because, you know, more biblically based than some, but, you know, it's the exact same thing that Peter denied Jesus 3 times because he was afraid. You know, this man's getting crucified. Like, I don't know him. Like, I don't know, you know, and yeah. That's what I would do. You know, I'm not going to take a chance of being strung up somewhere if I can say no. You know, I'm just
on social media right now. You can't say anything at all. You're annihilated from both sides. It's like, you know, I disagree with some of the things that far right governments are doing. But we need to unite right now and not argue. But it's really hard to have an opinion because you're really reamed by trolls on Twitter and.
I hate to say this, but I don't do any of those sites.
And you're good not to.
What's that?
You're right not to.
Well, I don't know that I'm right. I don't have, you know what? God's kept me busy. I don't have time. I work all day online because my job is remote. The last thing I want to do is sit at night and look at a computer. My eyes are bad enough as it is, just doing what I do, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't find, like, I like to see pictures of people. But I did find that when I was going on Facebook or any of those things to look at pictures, I look at my watch. It's like 2 hours later.
Oh, I know.
Because you go to one person and then the next person, and it just keeps you flipping the end. And I'm like, I don't have time for this.
I'm staying off social media as much as I can right now because I do have a rewrite deadline, a wedding coming up in our family. so many things going on in our own lives that I've got to harness that social media stuff. But right now we're live on Facebook because we have some really sweet, wonderful people here. It's a different community than the ones on Twitter. There are still good people everywhere, but I find that if I propagate good and I only really share the good things, it is a necessary something we should be doing if we are going to be on social media. It's to propagate the good.
Absolutely.
The more you multiply the good in the world, the more it increases. And absolutely, it's what you focus on grows.
Absolutely. Because, you know, there's so many places where this is applicable. Like there's people that have experiences, coincidences. We call them God shots. Other people call them God winks or, you know, God notions or whatever they call them. And people are having these experiences. And in my opinion, more than we ever have. I think that we're getting, if we're awake and we're watching, we see the signs, we see healing, we see all of it. Here's an example. There was an eclipse day before yesterday in Utah that came through that actually it was beautiful. It was sunny. You could see it. Okay. Here starts my saga. Now hopefully you will think this is funny, but when I found out that there was going to be an eclipse, I became terrified because when I was a little girl, my memories of an eclipse was this. I was outside playing with my brother and my friends in the neighborhood and by my house. At a certain period of time, in a really sunny day, my mom walked outside and she goes, "You guys have to come in now. I'm going to give you lunch and we're going to stay in." And we're looking at her like, you know, it's summertime and we're outside playing. What are you talking about? And she's like, "Because there's going to be an eclipse." I was somewhere between the ages of 5 and 10. I didn't even know what an eclipse was. And I, of course I'm balking. And she goes, "If you stay out here, you'll go blind."
Oh God.
Yeah. That's what I was told. So we went, now wait a minute. We went inside and She drew all the curtains in the house and we had to stay in. We didn't get to look at anything until this was over. And so all of my life, of course, I live in an area that is most of the time, like kind of dreary, not a lot of sunshine, not something that you would really get to see an eclipse. So anytime it was happening, I was never someplace where you could actually see it. Mm. So anyway, I'm getting sent a welding mask so I can go at this eclipse. And I'm terrified. I was terrified in this room. I'm like, I don't want to go blind. So I called a doctor friend of mine and I said, "Listen, I'm terrified. There's an eclipse." And she's like, "Oh, that's wonderful. You'll get to see something that most people don't get to see." And I'm like, "But then I'm going to go blind." She's like, "Excuse me?
Where in the world?"
And so she said, "Look how damaging our words can be to somebody." And she goes, "This is no different than you going outside with sunglasses on. You don't look at the sun. Yeah. You're fine. Go enjoy this." And so I go to this area in this hotel where there was people, they were called gamers and they were all there. And they kindly let me join their group. And they have actually solar glasses. So I have on my sunglasses. I have a shield, like one of these, whatever, welder shields. And this little boy that's like 9, he's like, "Can I look through that shield?" And I'm like, "Okay." And I gave him the shield. He goes, "Oh, it's green." And I looked through his little glasses and it was like normal. I didn't go blind. I walked through that fear, but it made me realize that God brought me to Utah. I got to see an eclipse. I no longer have a fear of going blind by that. The funny part was, though, after it was over and I came back inside, I took the shield down. But I still have my sunglasses on. So now I'm in the room talking to the manager of the hotel with my sunglasses on, not realizing I have my sunglasses on. And I'm in my head going, "Oh, I must be going blind. She looks really dark."
Oh, that's funny. And you also look like a celebrity because celebrities, we wear them indoors all the time.
I had them on and I said, "Oh," I was getting in my head going, "Something's not right with my eyes." And then I realized I had my sunglasses on and I'm like, you know, trying to work through
all an illusion. This brain can come up with so many stupid things.
Oh,
you're right. A parent should never put fear into a child over. I'm sorry your mom did that to you, but it's a good one.
But here's the thing. She didn't know she was doing anything damaging. She didn't know that. She did probably what her mother did to her. I don't know. Exactly. But, you know, so she didn't know she was damaging me. And this is growth. This is growth from being in constellation therapy to realize that she did the best she could with what she had. Right. And she loved me in the only way that she could. Was it the way I would have preferred? No, because my love language is touch. So I need that.
By the way, speaking of touch, when my stepfather had dementia in those past 3 years, I was taking care of both parents. He would walk through the house hollow. I mean, I have so many funny stories about Chuck. He was in a Disneyland of his mind. He thought he was on a ship. I had to talk him down off so many silly things. He thought Mom was Vanna White. He didn't know her name. But at one point, I remember him walking through the house going, oh, oh, looking really hollow. And I went up to him and instinctively just hugged him. And he calmed down right away. He goes, oh. And he came back. And it was like, oh, the power of touch.
The power of touch.
Hug. Yeah. Power of love. It's like such a healing force. And touch, you know, is really it.
Touch is it. But you know, everybody has a different love language. And there's that book, The Five Languages of Love, or Five Love Languages, I forget.
Oh.
It's very interesting to kind of take the exam. You can actually take, there's an exam online that you can just go in there and take.
Awesome.
And you know, I could not understand for the life of me, because I like getting gifts. I love getting gifts. I mean, give me diamonds and nice clothes and all that stuff, and it just makes me happy, right?
Yeah.
But it wasn't the same kind of happy as if somebody touches me and hugs me and holds me tight. And when I don't have that, then I feel that hollowness, like you're talking about Chuck having. And I'm sure as the mental capacity starts to lessen, you're looking for that more and more, for that touch. Yeah, that would be my guess.
Wow, that's really, so people who live alone, how do we get them to feel loved? I mean, there's self-love, there's meetup groups where you can meet people who do your sport, like bicycle riding and horseback riding and meeting up to do science projects. But you do need, the human touch is really important.
Isolation is very dangerous. Isolation leads into depression.
But saying things that are that definitive are also not wise, because there are always, I've noticed the human brain has ways to make us depressed by saying, you know, if someone's isolated right now and they don't have anyone with them, that keeps them locked into the negative.
Well,
out of that too.
Yeah, but here's the thing. There's a difference between isolating because you want to, like maybe you're writing your book and you need isolation. You need to be alone. You need to do it like that. Right.
Yeah.
I'm out here in Utah working. When I'm working, I want isolation. I don't want a bunch of people talking to me and coming into the room and stuff like that. Even with my mother living alone, there's times she wants to be alone. She wants to look at things that they've done in that house together, or pictures or memories or whatever it is that she's doing. And she wants to be alone, right? There's a difference between that and then choosing to isolate and just choosing to, like, no, I'm not going to eat. No, I'm not going to go out. No, I'm not going to go here. No, I'm not going to go to church with you. No, don't come pick me up. And that becomes a choice at that point, you know, and that's.
Today I made a choice to not be in my head anymore. I made an actual real intentional choice. And I wrote it down. I went, I'm going to decide to just trust the universe. Trust this thing. I believe in the infinite goodness of the universe. Yeah. And I don't always call it God. It is God, but people get scared of that word. So when I talk about God shots, to me, they're synchronicities. Carl Jung, whom we're going to interview, a woman who's a Jungian dream researcher.
Yes.
For next show. He wrote a book. Carl Jung wrote a book called Synchronicity. And he mathematically proved that coincidence is something that is so almost spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
There's no mathematical explanation for random coincidences. They all seem acausal, not acausal, causal. They have a cause. They have connections. There's matching. Quantum physics also proves that there's nothing random in the universe. It's not all chaos, okay?
No, not
connected.
At all.
Everything's connected. So it's so fascinating to me. When you come back on the show one day, we're going to do these experiments with your cholesterol experiments.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do these brainwave experiments. And I really believe we can prove the infinite goodness of the universe, or some call God, through science. I think it's actually...
Oh, absolutely, you can. I mean, you know, and I know that, you know, this is where you and I, Lydia, like come from the different backgrounds, which is good, because we marry those together to prove to all people, no matter what your belief, no matter, and religion is man-made. So whether, you know, whether you want whatever religion base you are, we marry those two things together. Now, if you look at the Bible tells you that God is the great physician. That's what he is. So you want, so you want the great physician. There it is in writing. And it tells you that, right?
And God is love, it says also, I think. In the Bible.
Yeah, of course, God is love. Of course. And we are extensions. We are made in the likeness and image of him.
So we express that love. In other words, we are the expressive, like if God's the sun, we're the rays. We express the sun's business, you know, the sun's essence.
Yes, our hands, our feet, our mouth, our eyes, everything that we should do for the good of others.
Exactly.
That's what we're for, you know? And it seems like when I live my life in that capacity and I wake up and I just take a breath and it's not about me and it's about, okay. And I say my prayers, I'm reporting for duty. What's my assignment today? Because I have all my assignments, my earthly assignments, but what are my spiritual heavenly assignments? And it's just amazing how I'll meet somebody new that needs to talk to me. You know, this just happened. This just happened to me 2 days ago. I got a new iPhone. Finally, I got a 14. You know what? I didn't get a 15, and I'm going to tell you why. Because when I almost did, and here's my 14.
this is the 14 too, and I'm so mad that I didn't wait for the 15. Tell me what is good about this.
What I think is good about it is when I was standing there and he had brought me out the 15s and brought me out the 14 and mine was an 11. So, I mean, anything's going to be an improvement.
I have six.
And so I just didn't have much data space on it. And with the university being on my phone, I needed more room. And that was my whole thing. So as I'm standing there, I'm noticing that my cell phone, my 11, is going down on battery. And if I'm going to keep my 11, I need to charge it to get back because I'm walking every place I'm going in Utah. I'm walking. Yeah. And I went to plug in the 15 plug to charge my phone and it wouldn't do it. And I went to charge the 14 and it charged. And I looked at the boy and I said, you know what? I should say young man. He wasn't a boy. I'm getting the 14. And he looked at me and he said, why? And I said, because all of the adapters that I have in my car, in my Jeep, in my house, for my office, everything fits. And I said, I'm not going through buying all that new stuff. I'm just
You got to buy all new adapters. I'm going to wait. I'll wait another cycle and see what happens on the
system. So I'm still trying to get used to this and get things downloaded on it. And it's taken me a little bit of time. But anyway, the reason I was telling you that story is because this young man, he was 18, that was waiting on me. And it was Sunday. And we started talking. And here was his story, which I just found fascinating. So he's 18 years old. Just the nicest boy, very helpful. The store got very busy. And he was kind and considerate to everybody. And I was there the longest, obviously, getting this new phone. And so he told me a little bit about his story and we started talking about God. And he said, you know, he goes, I had started using drugs and he got really involved in that and got to the point where he was totally isolated, basically homeless, basically empty inside. And he's like, one day I just knew I was done. He goes, I was just done. I didn't want to live anymore. I was done. He goes, and I'm in my head and I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to do this. Right. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he was going to a class. He was in high school and he was going to a class and he's like, there was like 100 students in there. And he goes, never in a million years did I ever think the teacher would look at me. He goes, because he wasn't part of the in group. He wasn't part of anybody that paid attention in class. His work wasn't stellar. And he was just like a druggie, whatever. And after the class, the man came up to him and said, would you like to go to church with me? Out of the blue. And the boy was kind of like, he goes, at that point in time, I just thought, well, I ain't got nothing else to do besides kill myself. So I might as well go.
Yeah.
And he's like, that night changed his entire trajectory. His last day here was Tuesday and he's headed off to the Marines. He wants to serve our country.
Wow.
He believes in the United States of America. He's 18 years old and thinks it's going in a wrong direction, and he wants to be part of the solution.
Wow, look at this kid.
And just because one adult took notice that he was struggling and said, would you like to go to church? But no, you don't have to say church. You can say, would you like to get a cup of coffee? Can I go
to a coffee meeting?
Yeah, a meeting. Can I take you to get you lunch? Thanks. Anything, just to make somebody feel like somebody cares.
Absolutely.
That is so important.
Oh my God, I mean, is it ever?
Yes. Yes.
Jay Shetty, who's an incredible, he's like the newer Tony Robbins, but a much more spiritual thinker. Actually, they're all good, I guess. But Jay Shetty said, maybe this planet Earth, this life we have here, is a school of love. Imagine it, visualize it as a school of love. And you're only here to learn how to love. And that means get rid of the selfish ego, which is the constant self-centered fear. Because if we really are giving and generous, they say that increases your happiness level. That actually is a combatant to depression, is generosity. It's an antidote to depression. So maybe we're here to learn to get over ourselves and to be in service to others. You know, it's like, you know, look at me, how cute I, it's all that cute stuff about the ego and how much success you have and how much money you have. You can't take it with you.
Correct.
What at the end of life, you know, what have you contributed? What have you done to help someone else? I really feel that's what we're here for.
And
to
I agree.
Love ourselves first and then extend that love to others, because you can't give away what you haven't got. So if you really don't love yourself, you're going to go out and those are the people that shoot up schools. I mean, you have to have a good, healthy self-worth. Mm-hmm. And that comes from self-love, which isn't an arrogant, narcissistic thing. It's your essence, really.
And I think that some people are lucky enough to have parents that from day one make them feel secure and safe and loved. And you know, we're all going to make mistakes. Like I said before, we're all human. We're going to make mistakes. But to give a child that foundation of safety, just safety, because it's so important, right?
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, I look back and I told you I was now in the process, and I have been for 7 years of writing a book. And I mean, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, right? you know, I probably have 8 chapters written in a book, which the title has changed. And yes, I have multiple God shots that we could talk about. I mean, I've had miracle God shots that we can talk about, which are quite fascinating. And I love talking about them all the time.
Yeah.
At the same time, when I heard in my brain, it all matters. That's the title of your book. It all matters.
Oh, I love it.
God shots matter. Your words matter. Your actions matter. Your motives matter. It all matters. Everything that you do matters. You know, like staying in this hotel and having a continental breakfast every morning, right? Mm-hmm. I went down the other day and I tipped the woman that is getting that food ready at like 5 o'clock in the morning. Now, do I have to do that? No, I don't have to do that. Do most people do that? Probably not. But here's what I want to say about that. I gave to somebody that was giving to me, and what a gift.
Oh yeah. I love that. You know, at farmer's market, nobody was tipping the cleanup women who were cleaning our tables. And I just gave, you know, I didn't have a lot of cash on me. I just gave each one a $5 bill. It was like their faces lit up, you know, and you can do that even if you have very little. The more you give, the more you receive. It's really weird.
And you know what? It wasn't about what, you know what, in my opinion, it wasn't about what you gave them. It was about you noticing.
Noticing. Them. Interesting.
Noticing. Noticing that they're doing a job to make your stay or your time there more comfortable and pleasant.
And in hotels, I always leave a tip in a hotel room for the cleanup women, and they're like, always, I was taught that early on, leave it by the bathroom sink or wherever you want to leave it so they see it.
Yeah, absolutely. And all of those little things, like all of those little things matter. You know, the way that you talk to your spouse or your significant other in front of the children, it matters, right? What you name your child, it matters.
Oh, wow, darling. It matters.
I mean, things matter, and we take everything so for granted. And just like, you know, I know when I was drinking, And people used to say, you're hurting everybody by drinking. I'm like, no, just me. If anybody's getting hurt, and I'm not getting hurt, so I'm not worried about it, right? I look back now, decisions that I made, people that I took hostage, things that I did in that drinking time, it matters. It matters.
Well, if I think about drinking, my poor little brother, you know, he hurt himself a lot, but when he died, then the girl he was in love with drank all the way to his memorial service and then had a head-on collision and killed an entire family, an eight-year-old boy and herself in a drunk driving accident. It matters, okay?
It does matter.
It matters how you're disconnected from your kids when you're drinking because you're numbing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You start, when you take off the drug and alcohol and you're no longer numb, you feel all your feelings, and that means all the good feelings too, everything.
You know, I met a woman here and she just fascinated me, but she was originally a mother of seven, biological mother of seven, and all seven children were taken from her because of use and using. And she got obviously very emotional because her choices had led the state or people to no choice, but we're going to remove these babies from you. And she started working this program and she's very dedicated. And this has been a while. And somebody came to her, she just shared this, and asked her, the same people that took her seven children away from her at one point in time long ago, came back with an abandoned baby from a mother that was in the same spot she was in all those years ago, and asked her to foster this baby.
Oh my God.
And so I know, right? I mean, it just gives me cold chills. Those to me are God shots. God is so good to us. He's given her a redo. Now you're ready. Now
every
you're ready.
Moment, you can start the day over. You can start your life over at any moment.
Yes.
And actually just stand up and go, you know what? I let it all go. I forgive myself. And I'm starting new right now. And keep on falling up. That's the title of my book. Hey, we have another show we're going to do. We're going to tape it today. We're going to change outfits like Hollywood Squares. We used to do that. We used to do five Hollywood Squares in one day. It looked like we were on five different days by changing our tops. And we've got to send the link to the dream researcher we're having on. She talks about visitation dreams, prophetic dreams, and what your dreams mean. And this is
going to be a dream educator, and she's phenomenal. Nancy, so it's coming up next.
Yeah, we're going to log off now, and I'll send you the link for the new show.
Okay. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, you guys. I'll look through all your comments later and try to answer them. I'm sorry. I need to have Cindy or somebody help me as a producer to read me the comments while they're going on. We'll try that later. Okay. Love you guys. Bye. Okay.
All right. So what do you want me to do?